All right, welcome. This is your host, Will Hemingway, and you are listening to the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. No tinfoil hats here, no ranting rhetoric, simple, stoic, thoughtful enlightenment on training in risk management, preparedness, and proactive survival. Survival is every day, so live well. The Practice Preparedness Radio Show comes to you live every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time on WNJC 1360 AM, South Jersey, Philadelphia. As always, listen to us live on the internet via my website, practicepreparedness.com. We stream every time on TuneIn. Find the link on our website via the Listen Live button, or if you are in the Delaware Valley, you can listen live at 1360 on your AM radio. As always, you can stream the past shows. You will find them archived on the website under show notes or select one from the scrolling list on the website's right column. Thanks for joining us. I am your host, Will Hemingway. I want to stimulate your little gray cells. Let's get started. All right, good evening, and I am your host, Will Hemingway. Tonight, I want to talk about something that is a fundamental base to preparedness and survival, and that is planning. Yes, I know it doesn't sound sexy, and I know it doesn't sound really thrilling, but it is the key to your survival every day. So, I wanted to touch on a few points about it, actually, maybe an hour of it, depending upon how I feel, because I think it is really important that people really have a good understanding of how it really works versus the general perception. So let's get started and with it right now. Is everything all right over there? So, in any event, when it comes to planning, and to, now that threw me off, so no idea where it was. In any event, when it comes to planning, the key is that you have to understand that no matter how careful you are, no matter how many people are involved, no matter how thorough that you are, in the end, your plan will probably not work, as certainly not as you expected, and will certainly be in utter chaos and turmoil by the time you get done. But that is not a reason to not plan. As a matter of fact, the key point about planning is all about the fact that in order to plan, you have to take your thought processes through a whole series of activities in order to come up with that plan. And that is really what it's all about. If you ask anyone who teaches or consults and plans, lays out plans for anything from a disaster plan for a corporation to you name it, pretty much any kind of a plan that you can imagine that is more complex than getting up out of bed in the morning, you will find that there are some basic things. The concept of planning, anyone with any experience in the world and a brain knows the outcome of any action is always better when you've practiced, analyzed what happened in your practice, and then planned how to not have the failures that happened in the practice occur again. This is what professionals in the risk management industry, in the EMS services and whatnot, they all do. The military does it in varying levels of success. But in the end, the key is you are always better for it. In the real world, it will very rapidly and brutally teach humility to anyone who believes that they are an exception in this rule. As I always say, the U.S. War College teaches that every battle plan is perfect until the first boot hits the ground. And I always add to that, victory goes to the stoic one who maintains their cool adapts without emotion, rapidly analyzes and exploits a well-established intelligence network's data, and without ego, sticks to the originally stated goal. And all of these things happen by step-by-step, careful planning. Now, I am notoriously known amongst my close circle, small circle of close people in my world as despising planning. It's not really that I despise planning, it's that I really enjoy in my personal life because everything else is so demand structured of being able to be highly spontaneous. That said, my planning and practicing in the background to handle the things that will be most destructive or most distracting gives me the option that when I live my day-to-day life, I don't have to be anal retentive about everything being in a certain time and everything in a certain place, because I can roll with it and I can adapt very rapidly, which is a really critical piece of the function. Planning is perceived by most people to be singularly focused on creating a plan. And since a lot of people hate writing after they get out of school, they avoid it like the plague at their own expense. The fact is that writing things down when there is more than one people is not an exercise that makes you feel good. It's a necessity. Because until people have seen it in writing, have written it, and then shown it to each other, reviewed it, and talked about it, there's no way that you're going to have a viable plan. Because perception, very important, perception changes the meaning of words to people based upon their perception of context, which is another really important thing. When we plan, the plans have to be in context to the situations. So it's not about a tornado or a hurricane. It's about, are we moving people from a hospital? Are we moving people from a school? Are we moving people from a daycare center? Are we moving people from a retail or a factory facility? I've done hundreds and hundreds of evacuation plans and disaster plans, business continuity plans. All these things are all part of preparedness, because in the end, if you have a natural disaster in your area and the place where you work didn't, and you and didn't have a plan, that means that you're going to be out of work because they have no plan to keep it going. So you're not going to have income. How's that going to help your plan? Not very well. People don't really realize, and there are certain groups of people who see all businesses as evil, ignoring the fact that the way that they pay for the things that they use to bash them come from working with, for, and around them. And the fact of the matter is that in the end, we absolutely have to be able to have everyone who's involved know what is going on. So this is critical to the big picture. And so when we're looking at planning, what we're really looking at is, in fact, much, much more important than writing on a piece of paper. That's the end result. Planning is an exercise which causes us to practice, to play out exercises and scenarios that allows us to tune the supply, equipment, knowledge, skills, training of those involved in implementing the plan. And then once that's done, have a final product, which is a written plan. All that the written plan is to help others who are joining late to come up to speed, to be able to work within the guise of what the plan is. The true value of planning and preparedness is that if it's properly implemented, as I said before, even if the planned incident never arrives, like doomsday or whatever, a tidal wave or some mega tsunami or earthquake or something, in the end, even if that particular incident that was planned for never arises. The practice of the skills, the coming together, learning how to work together, readily adapting to countless other types of situations in that plan, then adds to your ability to react to others that you may not have yet planned for. Because in the end, it makes you, helps you grow. You grow as a person, you learn, you broaden your skills and interpersonal skills so that the others around you who you may choose or that will end up being in your team or in your group or working with you out of necessity or desire will be able to work together more fluidly. And that's really the key. That in itself betters everyone's life, reduces stress, reduces the likelihood of injuries and accidents, and as a result, everybody wins. Because while we listen to these anti-fa morons talking about how they want to be anarchists and live in an anarchist society and blah, 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 they'd all live about 3 days in the real world if it really happened, because they have no skill sets. They don't even know. They don't even know the, you know, about what they're going to do. It's just, it's never going to happen. They won't survive. Perfection, the key to remember with a plan is that it always will forget or miss something. Perfection is not possible in the real world. That is why adaptability, fueled by a broad range of skills, knowledge and gear that you've already put together will pay off exponentially when the trouble comes down. Over the years of teaching risk management, loss prevention, and preparedness, I'm constantly surprised at how many really well-educated people who are skilled, they're not lazy, they're used to doing hard and difficult tasks, and yet they avoid the process of making a formal plan. Because basically they'll tell you that they believe they won't get it right. So that's, you know, they're just not gonna bother because they hate it, because it annoys them, because the plan doesn't work. The key to remember is that some plan, some practice is always far better than no plan or no practice. That's really the key. Because, you know, in the end, you will have thought about these things. You will have already spent time before you get there. So let me tick off in some basic order, some basic perspectives. We'll start with some simple perspectives. In life, if you're married or maybe not, whatever, you may have a child. When you have a baby, there are lots of things that will go wrong every time you try to go out, from projectile vomiting to pooping in places and times where you least desire and hope, to running out of diapers, to food, to methods to clean them, etc., etc., etc. Those of us who take that process seriously, mine are in their mid-20s, so I don't have to take that seriously anymore, but I lived through it. If you want to talk about kits and preparedness, there is no better example than when you talk about a diaper bag, about getting ready, putting together, say, now most men who'd like to maintain their dignity turn the diaper bag into some kind of backpack or something. And when you stock it, if you do it wisely, by following some basic rules. So the basic rules are this: you're going to bring the things that you know you need. You need diapers, you need wet wipes, you need maybe rubber gloves or some kind of gloves. You need a pad to put them on and so forth. And then when you do, then you take it with you. And when you find out you're missing something, you make a note to yourself so that when you get home, that ends up in the kit. This is how we become prepared. This is how we plan, and this is how we prepare for ourselves to be ready. I think we have a caller. Hello?
Hi, Will. How are you?
Hey, Jim. How you doing? Thanks for calling in.
I'm doing
so. And I know you've been really actively planning lately, but I want to finish this thought real quick, if you would. So most people who have never really, you know, formally planned, they really don't get it. And a lot of times they'll say to me, well, I have no idea what to do. Well, if you put together a diaper bag and after your first kid, it was really easy the second time because, well, we'll leave out the part that parents on the second child have way less expectations than they did with the first one. But that's separate from the fact. The bottom line is, after you've done it for a while, you show up with a bag that started out at 1 pound and ends up weighing 10 because it's got extra clothes and all kinds of other things. And why? Because as you go along and you practice this and you enact this and implement this planning, this preparedness every time, you become more aware of what you missed. This is why practicing before you actually need something desperately is so important. What do you do when you get a flat tire? What do you do when your car won't start? What do you do when the battery is dead because you left the lights on? All these things are a base level of planning. And if you consider that, you already have some basic idea of what to do when you plan. And then it just grows from there. You can do that and chop it up into little tiny functions and attack each one individually and then put them together into kits, one for the car, one for the kids, one for you, et cetera, and weather and so forth and so on. And suddenly you get ahead to the point where it gives you a level of confidence when you go out. So I know you've been actively busy practicing and planning, Jim. What do you have to add into the thought process?
Yeah, so, you know, planning is one of the hardest things to do because it's about looking into the proverbial crystal ball,
mm-hmm.
saying, hey, this is the direction I want to be, and how do I get there? You know, so many people really start and they don't know where to start from. For me, it's about looking at where I want to be and planning my process in reverse.
Right.
And you know, people start out and they just flounder because they can't understand what the end goal is that they are so looking for.
And I think that's such a critical point you've just made, because by putting forward the goal, you know that in the end that that's where you want to be, and everything that you do is planned around it.
Yes. And that's, you know, honestly, well, once people get to a understanding of how to develop a plan, it tends to work. I heard you say earlier about, you know, the best laid plan fails as the boots hit the ground. And that's why planning never stops. You know, once I have plan A done, I'm going to work on my contingency plan, which would be plan B,
mm-hmm.
for when plan A doesn't work. What are my options? How are other ways I can get to the same place? You know, and that's a lot of times during disasters, you know, people say, oh, they tried this and it didn't work. Well, what else did you try?
Mm-hmm.
How else did you try and keep yourselves warm? How else did you try to, you know, keep light in the house? You know, something as simple, you know, people are always so concerned with modern conveniences. You know, during disasters, a plan could be as simple as, hey, light's not really a priority to us. We are going to, when the sun starts going down, that's when we're going to go to bed. You know, plans don't always have to be elaborate. They can, but they don't have to be.
Right, and the key is, like I said, having any kind of a plan is better than not having one. So if you start out and you start out with the basics, so if you take the goal, for instance, one of the most popular planning in the preparedness side is to survive in place. So your goal is to not have to leave the house. So what are you going to do that? So it begins with having food and a way to light the house in the dark, and a means to have water and a means to cook that if all the power was out, if you're on electric cooking, then you're going to have some other means, et cetera, et cetera. So that builds all right there. And then you start to extend out. Well, if a tree comes down on the house, do you have plastic to cover it or a big tarp? Do you have this? Do you have that? Do you have a way to stop water from coming in? What if something flew and hit the window and knocks your big window out in your living room? Does this mean you're going to now have snow inside or what? And then you add plastic and duct tape into your kit and so forth and so on. All of these things. And that's why I tell people all the time, when you're going to plan, the best thing to do is to break each and every individual thing up down into its own process. Plan that action out. So what if something broke the window? There's the answer. I have this, I have that, I have this. That goes there. It all goes in a place where you know it's all together because you may only have a flashlight to go look around, so you need to be able to see. If I need both hands to put duct tape on the wall to hold that plastic up, that means I need a headlamp instead of a hand lamp, or I'm going to need somebody to hold it for me. And this is how it begins to grow. On the professional side, you in the EMS and emergency services and OEM side, you know, obviously, most people are not really aware of the level of demand that's made because you're not doing it just for you or your family. You're doing it for an entire community of people who will run the broad range from completely no knowledge to being completely difficult and uncooperative, or as some people like to call it, my one friend's favorite term is non-compliant.
Yeah. You know, and that's, people become very entrenched in the, you know, I'm not leaving my home. You know, and I know as you've talked about before on your show, you know, at some point, leaving your home is something that you are going to have to do in a big emergency. It really comes down to, you know, moving, it means that you are going to survive. You know, people stay in their houses as the floodwaters come up. I'm okay, I'm going to an upper floor.
Help me.
Help me when the tree comes crashing down the creek and hits the side of their house.
Yep. And suddenly the roof is floating.
You have to risk emergency responders' lives mm-hmm. by putting them in an inflatable boat in raging waters with, we call them river gators, which is a submerged tree just below the waterline. And, you know, it really becomes dangerous, you know, but you have to have a plan to move and be prepared for some of those other options.
Absolutely. And that's, and as you know, I always say there is no survival without mobile survival. It's just simple. You may be lucky enough to stay still for a little while, but inevitably there's going to be one of 1,000 reasons that you're single-minded, myopic perspective that demands you stay is going to make you change your mind, and suddenly you're in a world of trouble because you can't move anything.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's a reason that fire trucks are all loaded with all kinds of equipment and ambulances and whatnot, because they can't exactly say, hang on, we're going to go back and go get this now that we need it. It's just not going to work that way. You need to be able to be mobile. And the fact of the matter is, I know lots of people who have spent a lot of time getting prepared, and all of their stuff are in totes that weigh more than they do, that are as big as they are, and they could never move across their room, let alone get any of them or all of them into anything they own to get it out of there.
So, right, and that really becomes a huge, huge problem. You know, and that's, it's important. I mean, it's really important that people have a plan, you know, driving, walking, other means of transportation. You know, not everybody can, you know, take the stuff on their back when their car doesn't start and move it out. So, you know, do you have a cart? Do you have a bike? You know, and people, really? Are you kidding? They, during Hurricane Rita and Katrina, when they both came through back to back, you know, there was no gas.
Mm-hmm.
So people had to have other options. You saw people walking down the interstate carrying their stuff in bed sheets.
Yeah. And
you know, you don't want to be that person.
That's for sure. And people who've been to my classes when we do that bug out class every so often, I've been told, oh, well, you know, I repeated it a couple times. The problem is everyone, there's always different people who show up. But more importantly, you really can't practice or go over it enough because there are so many things. You know that there have been several people in our group, in the meetup group, who have made up their own carts. I was lucky enough to get two of those bicycle carts that are made for kids. The one is a Schwinn, and it's rated at about 110 pounds. I can toss at least one of my packs and some other gear in it and hook it to my mountain bike, and off I go. And I'll go a lot further with a lot less effort than I would on foot, and it's not straining my body to carry all that weight. And in a pinch, I bet you I could get those tires to take more weight than 110 pounds.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's really the key. I stand on that thing and I'm 215, so I know that it'll take a decent amount of weight. But you're not going to do that on the day of the incident. So for people who are listening, I've talked about it before quite some time ago. I'll reiterate. If you're watching the trash as you go by, or now we're coming into the season again for things like yard sales and the like, keep an eye open for jogger stroller, especially a tandem. The singles are great because you can get between tighter spaces, but having a tandem gives you a lot more cargo space, so lots of uses. Excuse me.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of different options out there, Will. The, you know, and this is the whole thing. You know, people can sit behind a desk and put a plan together, but they need to try it.
Yeah.
So many times, and in fact, today was a prime example. So we're in the process. We've written plans at a municipal level of how we're going to evacuate our three hospitals and our seven nursing homes in the municipality. Hey, look, here's what we're going to do. Most of it, I've had the unfortunate opportunity to have tried in my past. For them, they've never done it. So as we were working through it today, you know, they're going, oh, well, they had a plan. They had some thoughts. We had shared it with them in the training class before, told them to go back, reevaluate their plan, and then we were actually going to run it. So we did that today, and they're coming out going, oh, we need to do this. Oh, this would make our life so much easier. It creates a thought process and a pattern for people to get into of actually trying it. See right. What works. It's just like food preparation, you know. You go through and you put all these menus together and, hey, this is what we're going to try. And then when something really bad happens, they don't have propane for the stove or they don't like the food that they've prepared. And that gets pretty old fairly quickly.
It does. And you know, the whole, and that's what I was saying in the very beginning, is that the real value of planning is not a piece of paper that says this is what we're going to do. It's what happens as a result of creating that piece of paper and testing that piece of paper and tearing it up and making a new one. This is that whole process of bringing people together and forcing them to think about it, where they're not trying to wing it on the fly as the problem's happening. You have the ability to go, oh, well, tomorrow we're going to go order that, and you better go find that. I know we have it somewhere, but I haven't seen it in 2 years, and that best end up here so we know where it is. These are the things that happen. I mean, I always like to use the example of the diaper bag, because even people who have no time or experience in the professional services can pretty much relate to the idea that when you take your child out and you go to, say, the restaurant, and all of a sudden they do that unexpected vomiting thing all over the place, and you have no spare clothes, and you have no extra cloth towels to clean them up, and no wet wipes with you and all that, the mere sheer embarrassment of what that brings to you should be a tectonic shift enough to make you think, maybe the diaper bag / backpack is now going to have this in that pocket and that in this pocket and this there and an extra set of clothes and so forth. I mean, I used to carry one of those little mini dustpans and brush that they sell at the dollar store, because after my kids at 3 and 5 would sit at the table, there'd be so much crap on the floor, I wouldn't want to leave it. So I'd get down on the floor real quick and sweep it up and take it to the trash can. And people were so astonished that I had a dustpan and broom. But you know what? No one ever gave us a hard time when we would go to go eat at a diner or a restaurant, because they were happy to take care of us because they knew that I was responsible. And that's what happens when you have a plan, whether it's taking care of your sprout or taking care of a fire. The firemen don't run to the fire and then go, oh, well, hang on. Okay, I see it's this, so we got to go back and get air packs, and we have to get a fog nozzle and all that. We left it back at the station. Give us 5 minutes. We'll be back. It's all there because they know over a period of time. And I think it's important for people to understand that, like you said, people avoid it. They run from it because they expect that perfection is the expectation and perfection is unattainable. Where at least getting started, it will begin to build, and it really literally changes the way people think about how they approach life, about how they approach things they do. When you go kayaking, you bring certain things, because after you've kayaked once or twice, you know what's going to happen, and you come prepared accordingly, et cetera, et cetera. Camping, fishing, hiking, you know, all those things. Why do I have a little set of clippers that are dikes that go really close to something to cut and are really sharp and don't take a lot of effort? Because when I was 7 and my grandmother was fishing with me at Hopkins Pond in Haddonfield, and she said, go ahead. She had put the worm on the hook, and I pulled back, and the hook went into her finger with the worm. And I had caught a really big fish, my grandmother, which we then drove to the doctor, and the nurse passed out on the floor in the room waiting for the doctor to come in. He walks in with a pair of clippers, goes clip, and spun it out and said, okay, here you go. Have a nice day. Bye-bye. And, you know, a year later, I was in Cub Scouts, and I was taking the fishing badge or whatever, and they talked about how to remove a fish hook. I was 8. Ever since then, I've had a tiny little set of jewelry dikes, diagonal cutters, most people call them dikes, that, you know, cut through steel very easily in every kit I have because of that. And it's the same thing throughout. I mean, it's all relative. If you're going to the gun range, what are you going to do? You make a kit and you put in hearing protection and some backup hearing protection for when you drop yours on the ground and your friend steps on them, and suddenly your $80 hearing protectors are not worth anything, but you have foam ones and gloves and this and that and bags for your breasts. It's all the same thing in the end, no matter what you're doing.
Yeah, and, you know, plans always start out the same way. You know, everybody's got, for everything people do, well, I shouldn't say everything, but for most things people do, they have a plan. You know, they, hey, I'm going to get up at this time. I'm going to eat breakfast. I'm going to, you know, take a shower, get dressed. I'm going to start the car, then drive to work. I'm going to spend my 8 hours at work and then drive home. I'm going to have dinner. Everybody's got a plan. They just have to understand actually how to put that plan on paper, because communicating that plan to their family, you know, is tremendously important.
Yep.
You know, so, you know, you start out a plan, you put a summary together, you know, have the key things. How are we going to eat? How are we going to have, you know, water? How are we going to have sanitation? You know, am I going to have, you know, security? Say, am I going to have to, you know, have a transportation plan? They, you know, that stuff is all important. After, you know, everything is over, you know, how are we going to get back to normal? What things do I have to turn back on in my home that I turned off? You know, all that stuff is really important to have written down so everybody understands it.
Yep. You know? Well, you know, and then there's another thing that people who aren't professionals on this side are probably not aware of, but it's worth mentioning, I think. I know you do them. I know I've done my share of them in my lifetime, and that's an after-action, report or an after-action look at what's happened, where you go back and you review and say, let's look at how our plan worked and what we needed to fix that and what worked and what didn't, so that the next time we encounter this, we've actually thought about it so that it won't happen again. And by the way, you always know something else will happen. It's just a matter of when and what. But in the end, that's really the key. And the after action look, review, so to speak, is really useful, because most people procrastinate about making a plan, and then they really procrastinate or completely avoid. It's basically cognitive dissonance. They don't want to deal with the fact that they screwed up, so they just blow it off or they blame it on something or someone else so that they don't have to go back to it. The problem is, in the end, it could be your life. So, or someone who is close to you that you care about. And that's why it takes only a few minutes here and there to put it together. Even if you end up making a gigantic plan and that plan requires a weekend or something, in the end, that's small potatoes for what you get back out of it. It really is. And it's so important, really important.
It is. Trying your plan and learning from it, it is key. You know, I always look at the things that, looking at disasters, there are things that go bad every time. Communications is one. The structure of the organization is another. Who's going to do what? Who's going to make the decision? You know, that communications piece is one of the biggest problems during any disasters.
Yeah.
You know, how do you communicate with your kids when the phones don't work?
Right. And these are really important things. So there are lots of things that you can think about to do in between time, but by the time it happens, it is way, way too late. So communications, when you first mentioned that a couple minutes ago, that is one of the linchpins to any plan for preparedness and survival of any kind of an event. And the problem is, it's rather nebulous in a lot of ways. You know, in the fire services and EMS, OEM and whatnot, Homeland Security, things like that, it's pretty straight up. Everyone is going to be able to use a radio that's on a controlled channel and so forth. For civilian use, it's way, way more complicated because, you know, not everyone's going to have a ham radio license. Are they going to have a general or a tech? Can they use 10 meter that has a long range? or are they stuck on 2 meter that's bound by 7 to 35 mile range, depending? And will any of the repeaters be up? Because none of these things are silver bullets. FRS, if it's short range, a mile, 2 miles, if it says 35 miles, by the way, listeners, on a FRS, you can be sure that unless you're standing entire on top of the Empire State Building or the local 20-story hotel, you're going to probably get a mile or two, maybe three if you're really lucky. But you still have that mile, two or three that you wouldn't have in a line of sight situation where you can yell out to them and they're going to hear you. So you need lots of layers for communication. If you're bound to the cell phone and the cell towers go down, if there's an EMP or a problem like happened back a while back with the derecho, when a lot of the 911s and the local cell towers went down, lots of troubles, because it's not as simple as just saying, oh, well, I'll use X. But having lots of options gives you lots of possibilities. And remember, text, if it's spotty, you can send a text. If they don't have a signal, it still goes to the server. And then as soon as they hit the tower and get a signal, the first thing that it'll do is the text will download to their phone. So that's very useful. Same thing with emails, because if they have a smartphone and they hit Wi-Fi, there may be no telephone service, but there may be internet service. So there's lots of options out there that you have to consider. None of which, by the way, are going to be simple enough to cover on one of these shows in one show, certainly. And I was thinking, by the way, Jim, that we might end up doing another comms class again.
Well, that would be great, because I will tell you that yesterday, Philadelphia firefighter died a couple of years ago, and the NIOSH report just came out yesterday. And listen, we only have so many radio frequencies that we can talk on. Guess what one of the number one findings was for issues? Communications.
Mm-hmm.
For as simple as it should be for us to do that, you know, that we do on a regular basis, day in, day out, talk on the radio, it became a problem. You know, and this is the thing, is that you have to look at options. You know, you were talking about cell phone and, you know, texting and internet and, you know, still in my wallet, I carry a 1-800 calling card, because most of the time when local phones, you can't get through and get a busy signal because the system is overwhelmed, you can dial out and get a long distance phone line to come back in and make the connection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is all about planning. If you go through, you research your options, you pick different ones that you think you might have success with, and then you try them. Make sure that they work.
Yeah.
You know, 1-800 calling cards, if you get the right ones, don't expire.
Right, and that's, I'm glad you mentioned that, because if you didn't, I was just about to. For those of you who haven't used one in 20 years, I used to carry an MCI one. You remember that name? I had an MCI card, and that was awesome, because it was one of the few that didn't screw you over by giving you an ambiguous, very little, tiny, micro-sized print that it expired after a certain number of months, and it was great, because you could stock time on it and just carry it. And if you needed it, you could walk in and say, look, I need to make a long distance call. I'll put it on my card. You know, it's not going to cost you anything. You can even let them dial it. Who cares? And then you're on. And in addition, you have the situation that you may not be able to hit a local exchange, but you can go out and hit out on an 800 goes that ends up somewhere else and then bounces back to the number, and you can actually get through. I've actually called my own office two floors down when I was in New York on the third or fourth day after 911, and it worked. I couldn't believe that it worked, but it did work because there were such a limited number of phone lines there after the incident.
Right. Yeah, and that's, again, the having a plan, the trying it, making sure that it works, perfecting the things that don't come through. You know, that when, me personally, when I put my plan together, I put my primary plan into place, and then I have my backup options there as well. Because I have a list of things, different options, you know, in the event of a power outage, you know, how I keep, you know, the food that I have in good condition, working it out, securing it, doing all those different kind of things. Hey, and by the way, when this doesn't work, these are some other options that I have.
Right. Well, I'm planning, if I can find a second one. I know I have one somewhere, but for the class that we're doing in 2 days on the Survival Chef, for those of you who don't know, you can go to the website at practicepreparedness.com, look for the sign up for the classes through meetup.com and follow the link, and you can come down. It's 7 p.m. on Thursday in Williamstown, but I'm planning on bringing down a couple of terracotta pots with sand in between them and laying it out with some hay, to show how it would be done underground. You merely only have to dig a hole about 2 feet, depending on the size of the pot, down, yep, and then cover it, and it will keep meat cool even in a high heat summer day. It's what they do in Africa all the time.
Yes, you know, there's a lot to be said for makeshift root cellars.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of really good options. You know, again, it takes a little bit of research and a little bit of, you know, insight where to go to get some of them. But, you know, how do we work that through?
Right. And in the end, it really does, and this is what goes right back to the recurring comment on this whole idea of planning, is by spending time thinking about each of these individual processes that you need to do, individually, you can pick one out. When I did corporate training for years, one of the things that I knew firsthand from having dealt with it all the time, after learning how horribly bad people were with procrastination, I was stunned by the fact that they so easily lost their desire, their drive to act, because they felt like they'd never actually see the end. And it really wasn't that they weren't going to see the end. It was that they were too impatient, because people are so used to immediate gratification, and you're just not going to get that. And you're really not going to get that. So the key part is to do what I used handily throughout 20 some odd years, was what's known as milestoning in the trainings community.
Uh-huh.
Where you give people little steps. I hate that term, but it's baby steps. You're going to do baby steps. So you're going to get, okay, first we're going to get you up and you're going to stand and not fall over. And then you're going to take a step with your right foot and not fall over. And then you're going to bring the other foot forward and not fall over. And when you get to that, now you've got a new milestone. You've walked a step each foot and you didn't fall over. Woo, okay, we're happy. Now let's see what else we can do. And it's the same kind of a thing throughout. When you do it, this is why I'm such a proponent of breaking up the tasks into smaller bite-sized parts. Because as you do, once people feel the success of seeing it pay off, another really good example in common day-to-day life is going out in your car. people constantly forget their headlights. They go into Walmart or wherever, and they come out, and their lights are on. People, a lot of people drive in the daylight with their headlights on, and then they forget because it's daylight when they get out of the car. And if you're not in a new car where it only leaves on the low driving lights when you turn off the key, you come out and your battery's dead.
And right.
Then comes the question, now what do I do? Well, someone had mentioned just now on texting that people are way too dependent upon EMS, fire, rescue. They're also way too dependent on things like AAA. If it's a really heavy day and lots of things have been going on, you may be waiting there for 3 hours. So being able to take care of yourself always puts yourself in a better position than not. Statistically, over the years, in the 2000 to 2010 period, according to research, it was 74 to 76%, depending upon the numbers you took, of women who were raped or physically assaulted in a parking lot at a retail center were, while they had a flat tire, a dead battery, or in one way or another were awaiting motor assistance from AAA, whatever. There's a reason for that, because you've sent the message by your behavior that you're a victim, that you're incapable of handling yourself. You've given up your ability to take care of yourself, and you're waiting for someone to come do it for you. Male or female, doesn't matter. If you've put yourself in that position, you may end up paying for that in ways that you won't like. So it's really critical that you look at things like jumper cables and a jumper box. Someone said to me today, well, if I have the jump box, why do you need cables? Well, because inevitably the jump box will be dead. And maybe I can't even get the car down to jump me because the cables aren't long enough and they'll get stuck. But if I take a dead jump box and I hook it to their car and run up the engine for 10 minutes, I will have charged up the box and maybe have enough to get myself started. That's the way it works. So you have to have redundancy. You have to have the ability to think about it and the desire to think about it, and then act on it by putting together a process and procedures and gear and whatever else it takes to do that.
Right.
So, well, I appreciate you calling in. Someone was telling me that they could hear me sniffling and that I'm going to take crap like they gave Donald Trump, saying that he was doing cocaine. Yes, I have allergies, and someone brings a dog into the station. So sorry if you could hear me sniffling in the background. I actually backed off of the mic so you can't hear me as well, but life is what it is, so we will get through it. Hopefully it wasn't too annoying. In any event, thanks again for calling in, Jim. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Well, you have a good night.
Take care now. So in the last minute or so, I just want to remind you that if you get started, you don't have to get all crazy about it. Start with a vehicle kit. Start with a kit to put together and throw it into a bin so that you can cook without power, so that you can light without power. These are the basics that get you started, and then build from there. So until next week, I am Will Hemingway. This is Practice Preparedness. Join us on practicepreparedness.com. And as I always tell you, there is no disaster when prepared. Till next week, we're out of here.
And that, unfortunately, will be it for this edition of the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. I am your host, Will Hemingway. Thank you for spending your time with us today. Don't forget to click the links at the top of practicepreparedness.com, to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and meetup.com. Until next time, please don't wait until it's too late. Live proactively, act with purpose every day, have a plan, and practice. Because, as I always say, there is no disaster when you are prepared. We hope that you'll join us next time for the Practice Preparedness Radio Show. Have a good day.
Well, I think my dogs Democrat. And it breaks my heart to have to say an ugly thing like that. But there's a big old pile of evidence that all points towards the fact. My dog might be a Democrat. Everything he eats, I provide him with a place to live just to keep him off the streets. But he just acts like he's entitled, even trying to unionize the cat. Yeah, I think my dog's a Democrat. Constitution that I keep on display, and every time Benghazi's on TV, he looks the other way.
What difference at this point does it make?
I know he's a liberal, even if he won't admit it. Tell me George Bush did it. He ain't got no papers. And what really gets my goat is if he could find a ride to town, well, I know they'd let him vote. His behavior has been hidden. It is my spread the wealth, government health, flea-bitten Democrat.